I'm a clinical canine herbalist and I do that full time. I realized that dogs were so sick, over vaccination, poor diet, high stress.
What are some of the real outlier success stories?
I have more than I can ever even talk about. When I realized plants speak through a different language, that's when I really started to understand them. Cannabis is just a plant.
Just a plant.
I do think that there are circumstances, again, like where Western medicine is very needed. I'm in a place now where I'm always going to try a plant or an herb first.
I'm excited for the future of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, me too. I'm excited for the future of all herbal medicine and fungi-based medicine.
So first of all, Rita, thank you so much for being on today. This has been way too long in the making. We were just talking the other day when we were at Super Zoo this year. I think we saw you or ate within a couple tables of you on like 3 to 4 separate occasions. So
we were like, we gotta go see her.
Yeah.
We say hi.
So we are beyond excited to have finally met you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, you are so welcome. I'm so excited to be here. Yeah, you should have came and said hi.
I know. We absolutely should have.
I was just...
Yeah, us too.
Yes.
By the end of it, we were absolutely exhausted.
Yes.
So before we kind of get into the meat and potatoes, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what happened in your life to get you into the position that you're currently in?
Well, I'm a clinical canine herbalist, and I do that full time. I do a lot of formulation and speaking and writing and all that stuff. But I grew up on a farm, and my dad used plants with our animals. He wasn't an herbalist. It was just kind of how things were, you know. It was a kind of a given. We had a dog that was super old, like between 24 and 26. Her name was Whoa. Susie. And you know, I didn't pay much attention when I was a kid. But when I was 30, I studied some Ayurveda at the University of Minnesota and some like Sanskrit and Eastern religion and things like that. But it just didn't resonate with me. So I went back to my roots of Western herbalism, which is like herbalism that's shared between like North America and parts of Europe. And we kind of share this plant base, you know, and a lot of people equate it to like Western medicine, but it's different. It's Western herbalism is those types of plants. And those are the plants that I grew up with. And so in my 30s, I started boarding dogs in a kennel-free situation. And I was, you know, I did some light dog training and rescue and things like that as well at the same time, kind of simultaneously. And I realized that dogs were so sick. Like people would hand me a bag of kibble and then a bag of pharmaceuticals and tell me they'd see me in a week or so. And I would be alone with their dogs and just like, this isn't working. You know, what is happening? And so, you know, a lot of them had a lot of things in common. You know, like over vaccination, poor diet, high stress, high expectations of their guardians, you know, these expectations that were kind of unrealistic. And so I started having conversations with my clients, and then I started making products, and that all kind of happened simultaneously. And then I decided that if I was going to go back to herbalism, I was going to dedicate myself to dogs. And at the time, I couldn't find, you know, it was the beginning of the internet, and I couldn't find any kind of like mentorship. So I kind of did it on my own with Barbara Fergois, who wrote Veterinary Herbal Medicine, and Dr. Cheryl Swartz, who wrote 4 Paws, 5 Directions, that book changed my life. And then one of my biggest mentors is an herbalist named Matthew Wood, who, of course, again, validated my work, which, and I just, you know, I made that up. Like it was interviewed recently, and they're like, so how did you, like, what school did you go to, or what, you know, how to become a canine herbalist? And I said, well, I just made that up. Like, Like, I was an herbalist. Well, what kind of herbalism do you do? I'm like, and dog did just sounded weird. I'm like, canine herbalist. I'm a canine herbalist. And then I just stepped into it, right? I just stepped into it. And some people say the canine, I'm not the canine herbalist. There's other dog-centered herbalists out there, but I'm a canine herbalist. And so I've been a canine herbalist for over 20 years, and it's kind of solidified itself. I've trained other herbalists. They're kind of hitting the pavement this year, and I'm just really excited about it. I love it. Love it.
So, how do you tailor your herbal and holistic practice to suit individual dogs?
So I use a system of energetics, and energetics came into my practice about, I would say, 6 years into it, through my mentor Matthew Wood. I read one of his books, and I was just like, it was just that aha moment and just floored. And I was like, oh, this is why this isn't working, and this is why this doesn't work, and this is why I haven't had good luck with this and that and the other, you know. And so then my protocols and my herbal guidance just like really started getting so effective. I mean, can I ha help every dog? No. Does every protocol work? No. But my success rate went up probably like twofold. I mean, it was amazing.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, now, so I need to know as much about energetics as possible. And I teach energetics. I have a course on energetics. It really does dictate like how I look at plants, and it's just plant language. So, 'cause what happens is we've been so conditioned to pharmaceutical medicine that we look at plants through that pharmaceutical lens of how we've been conditioned to experience our surroundings and what we do with food and what we do with plants. And they actually don't operate on that system. They operate on a system of plant language, which is energetics, which encompasses like the elements of fire, water, earth, and fire, water, earth, and what am I doing?
Air?
Air, air,
Yeah.
air, or earth, earth. And then traditional Chinese medicine adds in metal, but I just use the four elements. And so I'm definitely not a traditional Chinese medicine herbalist. I do use some TCM herbs. I definitely use TCM diagnostics and how the body talks, but other than that, like I'm definitely not a traditional Chinese medicine herbalist. But it when I realized, that plants speak through a different language, that's when I really started to understand them.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So, on the conversation of herbs, before I got into this world, especially in the traditional Chinese medicine and stuff, when I hear the word herbs, I'm thinking basil, oregano, parsley. It encompasses so much more than that. So, what separates an herb from another plant?
I think medicinal use.
Gotcha.
You're not going to refer to a plant that has like no discovered medicinal use as an herb. It's just more of a plant,
Okay.
like a spider plant. But they do clean the air. But
Yeah.
a spider plant definitely would be a medicinal plant, or mother tongue, which is sitting over there staring at me. It doesn't have a lot of medicinal uses or any.
Got it.
Has uses, but not medicinal. So I think that would be an herb. You're mentioning a lot of aromatic plants like, parsley, oregano, thyme, things that we find in our cupboard. And interestingly enough, those are very warming. So they don't work
Interesting.
for everyone. And they add a lot of heat in different levels of heat. And because of their volatile oils. They have a lot of volatile oil. That's why they smell so beautiful. And not all herbs smell like that. They don't give off, every single one of them can be made into an essential oil, which is another conversation. But so I guess I would say medicinal use
Okay,
for
so I have
2020.
a kind of a weird sidetrack question. So Kenzie has been making these green smoothies in the morning, and what do you include in them?
Romaine, spinach, kale, celery,
Lemon,
lemon.
apples, banana.
Yep.
So she experimented recently because I told her, I said, thinking about like a potato, a lot of the nutrients and good stuff in a potato is in the skin. And a lot of times we remove the skin. So I said, I saw her like cutting the lemon and she removed the outer layer of the lemon when she was putting it in. And I said, would the same concept hold true? Like we sometimes eat lemon rind when we eat like a piece of sushi or something. And obviously animals in the wild are all eating the rind. So I said, you should try the rind in there one time. And what happened?
It tasted like I was drinking lemon essential oil. It was so bad, Rita. I was standing over the kitchen sink. I have this nutrient-dense smoothie that
And she's been loving them.
And I've been loving them. And I'm sitting over the sink and I'm like trying to get it down.
No, I can't even imagine how bitter it was.
Is that because all the essential oils are concentrated in the rind?
Yes.
So none
of the essential oils come from any of the inside of the lemon. And it's extremely bitter. You know, it's
that's
good if
fault.
You like candy it, dry it and candy it, you know, that's
sure.
And you like a sliver, you know,
yeah.
But, the potato skin and the lemon is more of a rind, you know, a rind. It's thick and it's pliable and it's tough on the outside. And that's also where all of the, if you don't wash it really well, all the toxins are on the outside of that lemon.
Ooh, that's really my bad.
Yeah. So like, you know, and you could try that with a banana skin and have the same, you know, a banana skin is just so bitter and
Whoa.
So like, so astringent that you'll lose all the moisture in your mouth, you know?
Whoa, that's crazy.
Okay. when you get a lot of the strings of the banana, like you don't take those off. That's what happens in my mouth is it gets like,
whoa,
Bryce hates bananas.
Yeah. I hate bananas. So I don't know about any of this.
Yeah. And that's part of the peel, those little strings.
Wow. That's so crazy. Okay. So back to the herbalism. I have two questions. The first one is, what kind of services are you offering pet parents within canine herbalism?
Pet parents, I do consulting. And if I'm too booked, then I have a kind of network of people that I refer people to. And then I offer courses. So I teach canine herbalism. I have my level one course is coming out in March. I have my energetics course for people to understand energetics so that they can not have a supplement graveyard and they don't email me and say, you know, I feed raw, but my dog still has this. And then I have a podcast and that's completely free. I have a service online at canineherbalist.com called Ask the Herbalist. So you can ask me a question if you want me to answer a question quickly within a couple of days or a day. You can use that service. And I have a store. So
amazing.
I carry some products that I use in my protocols and some other products. And I make a lot of my own medicines. So I make flower essences and tinctures and some phytoembryonics and different things. So I carry some of those as well.
Within the services that you offer or even within the training that you've gone through, what are some of the real outlier success stories that kind of convinced you that this, you know, modality was something to pursue?
Well, I have more than I can ever even talk about. So what the interesting thing is when I started taking up this work, I was running a pug dog rescue. It was the first holistic pug dog rescue in the country, one of the first holistic dog rescues in the country. And we rescued 332 pugs.
Wow.
And with this lovely veterinarian named Kevin Brummett in Mount Juliet, Tennessee, he would basically almost see all of the pugs that we rescued. And then we learned from each other, you know, he would teach me how, like, okay, well, we can't do this. We have to do this with pharmaceuticals. Okay. We have to do surgery. But then I would take the pugs home and get a diagnostic and then heal them with herbs. And the good thing is I only used really non-toxic herbs at the time. And so I didn't have to mess around too much with dosage. They helped teach me about dosage. They help teach me about tinctures and alcohol and I did use essential oils way back then. But I moved towards just plain tinctures because I never, essential oils are so strong and I hardly ever have to use them. So, and then I also learned about homeopathy. And so kind of the rest is history, but I've seen dogs like a pug, one of those pugs. I ended up adopting her, but cause she, God, she was so precious. She had no fur. So she had no fur. She would clear a room. Like, she smelled so awful and she was so cute. And one of the interesting things is she was put on a rabbit diet for like a novel protein. And she turned out being completely sensitive to rabbit.
Oh, but God.
Poor girl.
One of the things that was interesting is her nemesis was broccoli.
Wow.
And it was her favorite treat and it was literally killing her. And that case taught me a lot about energetics and sensitivity, and that anything that we put in our mouths, we can be sensitive to if our guts are just not working right. And she had like vet work that was like literally, I mean, it was like, I don't even know, like 10 inches high when we got her, and they had spent like, you know, probably close to 20 grand on her and they just couldn't take it anymore. So I took her, you know, it took me about 4 months to turn her around and she was fine. And then I was like, wow, you know, this is really great. And then I had another pug that had mammary cancer and she had like a couple months to live and she lived 3 years, with violets. Which are excellent for mammary cancer. Her lymphatics were stagnant. And so, and then just recently I had a dog, that had, this is the power of energetics. Like the dog was super hot. Like if you touched her, she was so hot. So her TCM doctor gave her cooling proteins and her mom was giving her cooling proteins and they're like, you know, and she was getting worse and worse and she had really bad yeast and it was just covering her entire body. Especially the undercarriage, like her belly was just crusty and thick and just nasty. And, I listened to her for a little while and I said, you know, I think she has what's called false heat.
Yeah,
and I think she's too cold, that she's cold. And, I said, I want you to start feeding her lamb. And she's like, but she's going to get hot. I said, no, she's not. I bet you, I don't know. I mean, can always try, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't think she is. I think her body's going to start to cool down and the yeast is going to go away. And sure enough, she sent me before and after pictures of 3 weeks. And it was like night and day because her body was so cold that it built all this heat up to compensate for the core being cold. And it built this heat up so that she felt hot. And logically, it would be like feed cool proteins, right? Feed cooling proteins. Mm-hmm. But no, she was too cold. And so it was just making her worse and worse and worse. And the thing with cool dogs is that they suffer from more pathogens and their vital force, like in TCM, that's their chi. What diminishes, it just goes lower and lower and they get more lethargic and more lethargic and disinterested. And then, so the colder they get, the more that is going to accelerate. And so we need to warm the core and we need to warm them up. And I mean, I could go on for like 4 hours, but I've seen such miracles with, you know, even homeopathy. Yesterday, we had a horse that, I'm not a horse herbalist, but I do have a horse. And this beautiful horse named Star, who belonged to our barn, went to a care barn that takes care of everything for your horse, where we have a co-op barn where my partner does chores and stuff so that we have low rent because it's like 3 minutes from our house. It's beautiful. But Star went to another barn and stopped eating. And horses cannot stop eating. Okay. A lot of people don't realize that they cannot stop eating. They have to eat or they will die quickly. And so, she wasn't eating. Her mom was hand feeding her. And I was just like, I told Heather, I said, go over to the barn and give her this arnica and aconite
and some rescue remedy flower essence. And it worked almost within 30 minutes. She was eating her grain. She was eating her hay. Her mother was so happy because they're like, you know, the vet's like, I don't know what to do. She's stressed, obviously, you know, going from one barn to the next. And and horses can get an ulcer within hours.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so we're bringing a little adored beast gut soothe on board to try to see if she has an ulcer, just make sure that she doesn't kind of just kind of preemptive striking that. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, without those remedies, something really bad could have happened yesterday.
No kidding. So that's so crazy.
I love it.
Then are there, I mean, herbs are a really interesting thing because they're obviously a lot of times foods, functional foods, but they're also used so medicinally. Are there any herbs that pet parents could incorporate into their animal's own diet or into their animal's diet that are kind of good for most animals, or is it very individualized?
Well, we would love that to be true.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. I would love to be able to answer that question, and I could answer it for sure. But not according to the, like, my holistic herbalism.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what you call allopathic herbalism. And like, why don't we just talk about like some herbs that could be given this winter, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Like herbs that are really good for winter. And you know, it's much more complicated to figure out your dog's energetics, but really simply it's because you're looking at the moisture element, like how dry or damp they are and how warm or cool they are. And it's all in a spectrum and a range. But just to answer the question, like what herbs would be better for my pup? It's kind of how they deal with the heat element. And so like, does your dog like to be covered up? Do they like to sit on the couch? Are they more of a couch potato kind of sorta? Do they lay in the sun until you have to take them out of the sun? Do they love a good warm blanket? If you put a heating pad down, are they gonna go lay on it and lay there for a while and just be super happy? You know, can they tolerate clothes in general? Or do clothes make them pant? Can they tolerate like blankets that don't breathe, like those synthetic blankets? You will hardly ever see a cool, warm dog lay on one of those because they don't breathe. You won't see a warm dog lay on an electric pad for more than a few minutes. Yeah, warm dogs can get cold for sure. But that's more of an external kind of stimulant than it is internally. So we're dealing with internal core, the core of the dog, and cool dogs just love, they love to be under the covers. They love to snuggle. They love electric heat. They love, different types of warmth. How do they deal? Like just observing your dog, like how do they deal with the heat element? And then there's dogs that are warm and they don't sleep under the covers for very long. They will seek out a nice cool tile floor. They pant easily. They do sit in the sun, or they avoid it at all costs, depending how hot they are. They do sit in the sun, but not for long, right? Mm-hmm. They're not super excited about being in a lot of heat. And it's a range. Some dogs are super hot, and then some dogs are super damp. That's a different conversation. But some people are like, well, I thought my dog was cool, but it also, or warm, but it also shivers. That's damp. Dampness makes dogs shiver. And so, or like someone who is a warm person, but also is feels cold all the time, but doesn't really do well with like eating ginger or having turmeric. It makes them feel uncomfortable, but they are cold all the time, right? Then you're damp. You have too much moisture in your body. So you're not, your lymphatic system is most likely not doing that well. So it's interesting. So like, if you look at that, just look at the heat element. You can kind of figure out what herbs kind of are good for your dog and what aren't. And energetics is only about consistency for the most part, unless you have a dog with really like ingrained chronic disease and what you're consistently doing. But unfortunately, as the human race, we consistently usually feed so much of the same thing. That's why it's great that your little book has all those 30 recipes so that you don't have to feed the same thing all the time. Yeah. But for winter, we have things like parsley, which is warming, and it warms the kidneys.
The kidney governs the winter time. Musculoskeletal CCL tears come up. We have a lot of urinary tract infections and ear infections in wintertime because those are all governed by the kidneys, and we need to keep them warm. And so we parsley tea, just steep it until it's green, put a little handful to like 8 to 12 ounces of water, steep it, let it cool, put about a quarter inch over your dog's food in a bowl. If you're doing infusions, just if you have a lick mat, don't worry about the lick mat for that. Just use a bowl. Size, face appropriate size bowl, and do like a quarter inch of that infusion or that tea. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Something that's a little more neutral for both warm and cool dogs is nettles. Lovely. The kidneys need a lot of minerals to function correctly. A lot of people don't realize that they need minerals, and nettles are a great way to add minerals quickly. They can be a little drying. So if you see signs of dryness, that means your dog's just a little too dry. But like for someone who's damp, nettles are perfect. And you just, again, little handful of dried nettles, about 8 to 12 ounces of water, steep it till it's nice and green. You can give the spent nettles to the dog on the food. A little quarter inch of infusion, cooled infusion on the food. Lovely. You can drink that. I love nettle tea. I put a little raw honey in it once it's cooled down a little bit. And I share it with my dogs. So they love nettle tea. It's just the perfect wintertime infusion. And then things like for cool dogs that we know are cool, snugglers, love to sleep under the covers, turmeric. In the winter is lovely. It has an affinity towards the liver and the kidneys. Turmeric is good. Kale, organic kale, only organic for kale and spinach because they're super accumulators, which means they accumulate a lot of toxins out of the soil. So you want to make sure they're organic, but kale and spinach and are good greens for the wintertime. You can also make infusions with them, which people don't realize. They just treat them as a plain old vegetable, but they make really great little sipping teas. You don't steep them too long. You kind of treat them like catnip. You don't steep catnip for very long, maybe like a minute. Otherwise, it's the most disgusting thing you'll have ever tasted. But there's things that you can do for the kidney. And I think parsley and nettles are two of the most wonderful things for wintertime.
Love that. Okay, so I have a question very much pertaining to a hot topic right now. How do herbs and herbalism, how does that fit into this canine respiratory disease going around?
I just had lung clinic. I had like over 1,000 people sign up for my lung clinic. It was
crazy. We heard about that. That's amazing. So amazing.
Yeah, so the issue, here's the thing for the respiratory disease. And like I told, I don't know, maybe like 250, 300 people actually showed up for the live. But there's a few things you want to do. You want to make sure your dog has proper levels of vitamin D, and that's in the between 60 to 100 percentile, which is much higher than what a lab's going to tell you is okay. Okay. So you want to make sure they're getting enough vitamin D. If your dog is pretty warm, they can tolerate cod liver oil pretty well, and that has a really good levels of vitamin D. And even either way, just for like, you know, a few times a week, any dog can benefit from cod liver oil because of the really bioavailable D in it as well. Mushrooms that have been exposed to sunlight have pretty good vitamin D levels. And then make sure that vitamin D is always given with a fat to help absorb it, or doesn't get absorbed. Or you can use a pill. Make sure there's vitamin K in with that vitamin D. And then selenium. Pastured eggs are very high in selenium. They have great selenium. Make sure your dog's getting selenium every day. Brazil nut, one, like a half a nut for a dog, gives enough bioavailable selenium. Selenium is super important at avoiding respiratory diseases. Vitamin D is beyond important. And then you have zinc. And vitamin C. Those alone, like bioflavonoids, rose hips, which are cooling and drying, this is a moisture thing that's going on. It's more dampening. And so you want things that are drying. And you want to keep things moving and warm. And so like ginger and turmeric and echinacea, calendula, different types of things like that. I made two respiratory tonics. They're in my store. They're at the top. One's for cool dogs, one for warm dogs. If you don't know what your dog's energetics are, choose cool. And I also made one that if your dog gets into a situation where their respiratory function is declining, it's called Harmony, Lung Harmony for cool and warm dog. I also made those. And I use what's called plant stem cells. So they're embryonic stem cells that come from plants. And wow, what they're awesome at is they heal and drain the body at a cellular level. So they bring organ function up and they assist in elimination and they assist in assimilation. And basically, you know, health is all about assimilating nutrients and eliminating toxins. A lot of times people think it's okay for their dog to poop once a day. Nope. They need to poop 2 to 3 times a day. 2 is great. 3 is sometimes better, depend on the dog. For like a dog that's more cool, pooping more is better because they suffer from constipation much more, or like a cold person suffers from constipation more than they would diarrhea, which is kind of like a warm issue. But they also suffer, cool people and cool dogs also are much more susceptible to this respiratory issue because the cool body is much more susceptible to pathogens. And so our lungs are our first defense against pathogens, that and our stomach acid. And a lot of dogs are stressed out, so they have low stomach acid. People are stressed out because they have low stomach acid. So cool people who have low stomach acid and are stressed are more susceptible to any type of respiratory illness this season. Wow. So I think herbs can really help as a preventative. And another thing I think people don't realize, some of the beneficial bioavailable vitamins that are in herbs in general. There's lots of beneficial vitamins that are in herbs. Nettles is chock full of practically every vitamin you can think of. Alfalfa, wow. Organic alfalfa is another really like nutrient powerhouse. Rose hips, lovely, full of nutrients. So rotating herbs in and out of the diet, I think, is an excellent way to help boost your dog's nutrition and help with this respiratory illness. The biggest thing is to keep things moving. Age-appropriate exercise. Don't stay in the house. Get your dog out there breathing fresh air. You can avoid people if you want, but you got to get breathing the air and get the lymphatics moving.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
So how do you stay up to date on the latest research and advancements in herbalism?
Rodney Habib. Sorry, I had to say it. I'm not huge on research. One of the things, because of the fact of who's doing the research, that's a big factor of mine, and I have a really hard time finding a lot of unbiased research. With how kind of money-centered we are and how much, there has to be a monetary factor in a lot of the research that's happening. Otherwise, they don't get money unless it pays off. Yeah. So I have a hard time with research right now. I don't ignore it. If I see a good study, most people share a lot of studies with me. So I like that. With phytoembryonic therapy, which I use a lot of, that particular system of medicine is highly researched by the companies that produce the extracts. And so they have done such amazing work, especially in fields of epigenetics, like turning off gene expression with these remedies. But the cool thing is, in like countries like Romania, phytoembryonic therapy is the system of medicine. Because pharmaceutical medicine isn't big in that country. And it's phytoembryonic therapy, which also is called gemmotherapy, is recognized as a system of medicine by the European Union. So that particular like band of herbalism, like sector or sect of herbalism, has a lot of research. Now they are doing a lot of research on certain types of medicinals that unfortunately the pharmaceutical industry is looking to, how can we change it so that we can give it a patent? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I'm not too big on that. However, through some of that research comes with finding more about the constituents of a plant. But like, for instance, the interesting thing, and like I deal with that in my book, it's called standardized herbalism. And when you standardize an extract, let's just say curcumin, which is the constituent that is looked at the most in turmeric, and turmeric is a very, you know, fabulous herb in general, root, rhizome. Curcumin can cause the body to have anemia. It can make someone or a dog anemic given too much of it, whereas turmeric cannot. And that is because it has all of its other constituents in it that help balance that, the side effects of that herb out. So when you start standardizing, and like same thing, like people say, oh, don't use milk thistle for a long time. Their research is based on standardized similarin. Okay. And it's isolated from the rest of the milk thistle. So regular milk thistle seeds don't have that. You can use them. I've used them for a long periods of time, very effectively. But standardized milk thistle, that's usually standard to like 80% silymarin, is completely different and you can get side effects. So you have to figure out, you know, what method are they using? What method of extraction are they using in the herbal research? But then, you know, like, I love the research that's coming out on mushrooms, medicinal mushrooms. You know, mushrooms are very misunderstood. They're not plants. You know, they're fungi, and I use a ton of them, and I have been using a lot of them. But I think, like, I talk about this in my book as well. My goal is to take Western veterinary medicine and Western herbalism and bring them together in mutual respect, where you get research-based medicine and anecdotal and in the field medicine coming together and respecting each other so that we can learn from each other and stop saying, you know, and stop being so divided. We have to stop dividing our methods and our respected indigenous cultures' healing methods, and also Western medicine. You know, there's a lot of great things to be found in Western medicine. You know, it has definitely saved my life twice, but there's also Western medicine needs to learn from anecdotal medicine and nutritional medicine and, you know, naturopathy to how to preserve longevity and how to prevent disease. But unfortunately, in this country, I can only speak to in this country because I've never lived in another country, disease equals very large dollars, which is not how it was and not how it should be. And I do feel like it's coming around because more people are not seeing the benefit of pharmaceutical medicine for longevity and quality of life.
Yeah,
you know, there's a difference between just staying alive and having quality of life. Yes. And so if we can meet in the middle, we can learn from one another instead of just disqualifying what another person is doing. Because I do think that the practitioners really want the best.
So you were talking about the turmeric and the curcumin and stuff. That kind of reminds me of the argument with CBD oil, with full spectrum versus broad spectrum versus isolate. It very much seems like it's similar, where you want to get these nutrients that you're after in a synergistic form, where they're in with all the other nutrients that are found in nature. Is that kind of the case?
Absolutely. I just posted about that like 2 days ago. Like there was
Show you.
Oh, really?
And I was like, read on. Yes.
I had a client that was, I said, you know, what CBD are you using? And she went and got it and she read it off. And I looked it up and I was like, this is not, she paid a lot of money for it. And I was like, this is an isolate. And then it has some added terpenes in it that are found naturally in full spectrum cannabis CBD oil. And so, you know, that's not the product you want, and you can get side effects from that product.
Can't you get liver damage from it?
Yes.
Yeah. So
you could. Not saying it would, but you could, right. Yes. You're not going to get liver damage with a full spectrum properly extracted oil. That, and again, you know, two of those studies that equated, I do love the study. I love to look at the studies and find holes in those studies of the ones that say negative things about certain herbs and cannabis and things. I love those studies. The issue there is it was not a full spectrum cannabis extract. It was standardized cannabis. So, and again, there you don't have the constituents to negate the side effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so
great. You need all those things. Absolutely. So yeah. And another thing about cannabis is that a lot of people forget that cannabis is just a plant. We have it on a pedestal, but it has its drawbacks. It's warming. It's only slightly warming, but there's like dogs that are very, very hot and have a hard time regulating their body temperature, cannot handle it a lot. They can't handle cannabis. You need to bring their temperature, their inner core temperature down in order for them to deal with it. Cannabis is a plant. It's just a plant that we've kind of, you know, deemed evil. And then now we're like bringing it out of its bright, shiny box and like, but I mean, it's a fabulous plant, but you know, I know a few other plants that are just as fabulous. It's just that cannabis has really got a lot of recognition, and, you know, we have an endocannabinoid system, but other things can activate that endocannabinoid system. There's a lot of plants that have endocannabinoids. But I happen to be a cannabis, you know, CBD lover, but I'm also an herbalist, and it's a plant. It's a resinous plant.
Yep.
Absolutely. It just reminds me of like going full spectrum on anything. Like, I just have been thinking about this a lot lately, like our relationship with the earth and our, like how we are here to tend to the earth, and the earth grows nutrient dense foods for us. Like, why would we separate it? It doesn't make any sense. And like, it is just a plant. Like, why? All right. I haven't really talked about this on the podcast yet, but I had a mushroom journey a couple of weeks ago. And
we're not talking about your functional medicinal mushrooms.
And I'm just like carrying around this journal, and I'm just like in the moment and like really feeling my body. And then I'm writing when I feel like it. And I look back and I'm like verbatim what I wrote. Seriously, this shit is so enlightening. Why is it so demonized? So I don't know. It's just, I've been thinking a lot about our relationship with plants, and I do think that there are circumstances, again, like where Western medicine is very needed. I've had times where I've needed to be on antidepressants. I've needed help with those kind of things. The chemical in my brains, they're just not all there. But I'm in a place now where I'm always going to try a plant or an herb first, because I just so believe that like our relationship with them, like, they are here for a reason. They're not just randomly growing. So that's my philosophical moment with plants and herbs and cannabis and mushrooms.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that if you ever get bored and want to do some reading, read, there's a lovely book called Invasives. It's invasive plant medicine, and it's how plants grow on the earth in areas where they're needed the most. And what we look at these plants that are so-called invasive, that in those areas, from what those plants actually do in the body, they sync up. And or like plants that clean the soil in areas that are polluted. And I mean, it's invasive herbology is fascinating. And with your mushroom trip, you know, psilocybin, different psilocybin mushrooms, I'm very encouraged by sciences and researchers' kind of desire to look at how microdosing certain toxic plants, right, can add to a person's kind of neurotechnology in their brain, you know, because
What?
one of the
Oh.
things is mushrooms sync with the heart and the brain at the same time. And we have more neurons in our heart than we do in our brains. And when the heart syncs up, that's when you really get that like euphoric high in the brain. And I just find that so interesting. See, Steven Buhner talked about that a lot. And I'm just so encouraged by the psilocybin research because of the fact that so many people are so stressed out, and we are just our chemistry. You know, when our chemistry is off, you really feel it, you know? And we are our chemistry, and we do need help with stabilizing dopamine and serotonin. And psilocybin has a wonderful way of doing that gently. Like, you know, when you microdose, you don't go on that high. You know, some people don't even realize it. They're just like, I feel so much better and so connected with myself and my life than I did a month ago, right?
Well,
So.
and like we're both in, you know, very intensive weekly therapy and stuff. And what I always equate it to is in we do IFS therapy, interfamily systems. I'm not sure if you know anything about it, but it's essentially the idea that we're made up of all different parts. And please correct me if I say anything wrong, but we're made up of all different parts. Kind of like when somebody says, "Oh, do you want to go out to dinner?" You say, "Well, a part of me wants to, but a part of me wants to stay home." That's kind of the idea.
I completely agree with you in that a lot of our connections are based through trauma, and it's held in our fascia of our bodies. And when we, you know, when you look at fascial release methods, you or tapping, or you know, like I practice Qigong, right? And when you tap and tap, and then you know, you tap, tap, tap. It makes you feel so much better, and if you feel so much lighter and so much release of all of that tension. And the issue is that, you know, our technology, like our Wi-Fi right now, our cell phones, and you know, I'll see someone with a cell phone, a watch, an Oura ring, and all the crap that falls into mine just because you can doesn't mean you should. Puts all of this stress, electromagnetic stress on our bodies. And then we have all of our stress in general. And then so many people are in fight or flight when they don't know it. And then they wonder why they are having gastrointestinal problems, why they can't digest their food, why they have food sensitivities, why their limbic system is completely depleted or their adrenals is because our bodies aren't meant to be in fight or flight like that. And a lot of it comes from unrecognized trauma and stagnancy in the body where we have these stuck emotions because we are our emotions and our dogs share our emotions. They are our emotions.
They
And
absolutely do.
it's really important to understand that and learn how to release that trauma. And herbs and flower essences can really help do that. There's a wonderful flower essence called comfrey, and it is for deep trauma. And it helps release like ancestral trauma, familial trauma, generational trauma. I like to call it bloodborne trauma.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and it's just, you know, like that Indigo Girls song, I'm paying for another lifetime. You know, like I'm living the trauma out of another lifetime. And there is some really great research on that, on how there is such a thing as bloodborne trauma. And I think that that's really interesting. And herbs can offer so much at releasing that without having to kind of relive it.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, well, and that's so what I was saying about therapy is like you kind of have this idea that we're all made up of these different parts, and then there is self, and self is the non-judgmental being in
Like
your
your
body.
highest
Your
being.
highest self. It's the one that doesn't have an agenda. It's the one that accepts you for who you are. And so the whole goal, I think, is to increase the amount of self present, not only in yourself, but all of these parts. And so what I've realized is mushrooms kind of put you in that high self, non-judgmental frame of mind. But similar to what you were saying, mushrooms are not the only things that do that. Therapy does that. Meditation, yoga, herbs. Like, there are so many, you know, tapping and different energy work. There are so many different things that can kind of get you into that frame of mind. So this documentary on Netflix with Michael Pollan, do you not remember what it's called? Is it
How to Change Your Mind?
How to Change Your Mind. I don't know if it's on Netflix, actually.
It's
but
based
it's
off of his book.
Yeah, it's based off of his book, and it's absolutely incredible. But it's the concept that, like, our minds are these hills, and our thought patterns, it's like a snowy hill. Imagine a snowy hill, people sledding down it, and these ruts that are created are our thought patterns. And so the more and more people sled down, the easier it is to fall into these old ruts that have been, you know, ingrained into the ground. And then taking psilocybin, or doing things that kind of get you in that non-judgmental frame of mind, is basically a fresh blanket of snow that fills in all those ruts. And now it's a lot easier to create the different thought patterns and not fall in back into those old ones. So I'm a very big proponent of psilocybin. I think it can do absolutely wonderful things for people. And there's even people in this industry who are starting to toy with microdosing animals and having really profound effects. So I'm excited for the future of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, me too. I'm excited for the future of all herbal medicine and fungi-based medicine.
Yeah, it's going to be. I think that truly, like, Angela has shirts made that say this. Plants and fungi will save the world or something.
Yeah.
They know to drug, say yes to plants and fungi. I always love that one.
Yes. Yes. So, Rita, before we wrap up, can you give a little bit of advice to somebody, say, that is just getting into a more holistic approach to their pets? What would your advice be to them on where to start? A couple simple steps. What do you feel?
How to approach it?
Number one, I would focus on diet before anything. Making sure that you're feeding a minimally processed diet, fresh food diet. Number one. Number two, breathe. You know, just breathe. Yeah. You cannot hold your dog in a vacuum. You know, health ebbs and flows. It's great 1 week and can go down the next. And all you can do is do the best job that you can. And you're not going to have all the knowledge. No one does. With plants, I like to pick one herb like every month, and in a year you've really learned a lot about 12 herbs, you know, and then in 2 years you got 24, and you can do a lot with 12 or 24. You can do a lot with 5 or 6. You know, like, most herbalists have a set of, like, literally like 10 herbs they use the most.
Whoa.
And like what you said before, you know, there's so many roads to healing. It's not just one. You have to do what resonates with your heart and something that you can, like, really, like, look into and stick to. And the biggest thing I can say for anyone is find how to be calm and to breathe and calm yourself down when things get stressful. That's going to have the biggest impact on your dog more than anything that you can do.
So amazing. So, Rita, before we wrap up here, I'm absolutely positive that whoever's listening to this, a lot of them are going to be interested in what you have to offer and what you're teaching. Where can they find you and connect with you? Website, social media, that kind of stuff.
I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram at Canine Herbalist. I'm on Facebook at Canine Herbalist. I have a private Facebook group, which is Dogs or Individuals. That's pretty much the extent of my social media. I'm dabbling in TikTok, but I haven't got there yet. Next year. I have a teaching platform and also where I house my podcast, but you can find it anywhere where podcasts are found, you know, Spotify or Google or wherever you're going, Apple, which is Dogs or Individuals with Rita Hogan. And then my teaching platform is canineherbalism.com. And then my consulting practice is at canineherbalist.com. And that's also my store.
Awesome. Rita, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your knowledge. This, we really have not delved into The exact topic of herbs, we've talked about obviously different sorts of herbs on this show before, but never really in depth. So we really appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge with us and our audience.
You are so welcome. I just had a super fun time and I appreciate it and look forward to chatting with you again sometime.
I love it. This will absolutely be one of many. Thank you so much. And for those of you that are listening or watching, thank you so much for choosing to spend your time with us today. As always, I'm Bryce.
I'm Kinsey.
And we'll see you in the next episode.